Welcome to Next Gen Mentoring Forum. The Next Gen Mentoring Forum series is to empower, educate, and illuminate individuals who are or interested in the financial planning profession. At each forum, an expert will discuss the topic in the field of financial planning with the purpose of inspiring critical thoughts and discussions. In today's session, I have the honor to interview Jennifer Baccarella, or Jenny, on the topic of how to leverage center of influence and referrals to grow your practice. My name is Dr. Jolly Jen. I am an assistant professor and the director of the financial planning program at California Lutheran University. I maintain an active financial planning practice specializing in succession program management at Value Growth Institute. I've authored three award-winning books, most recent peer-reviewed research book published by Pelgrin Macmillan titled Enhancing Retirement Success Rates in the United States. Next Gen Mentoring Forum is sponsored by California Lutheran University School of Management Financial Planning Program. We offer financial planning that helps financial advisors pursue a leadership position and grow their financial planning practice by deploying advanced financial planning, effective client communication, client counseling, streamline practice management, as well as leveraging FinTech. I am honored today to have Jenny for today's interview. Jenny and I both serve on the Women in Financial Services National Board. Jenny is an accredited investment fiduciary, AIF, and certified wealth strategist. Plus, she has tons of FINRA licenses in series 7, 24, 63, 65, and 99. Jenny is a wonder woman. If it's important to you, it's important to Jenny. That's her infamous line. Jenny has recruited more than 1,000 company representatives, orchestrated two clearing firms changes, and started a new broker-dealer firm. She manages a staff of 115, along with her three team department, which includes licensing, firm development, relationships. She is also the head of the team building committee and manages her own book of business. Jenny is a Girl Scout Dan mother and a member of Women in Financial Services. So welcome, Jenny. Really have a very nice to have you here today. You are muted.
Thank you. Thanks, Shelly. It's the infamous line, you know, from 2020, 2021, you are muted.
Right. I know that I've heard so many fabulous stories from you when we serve on the board meetings and things like that. So I'm really very excited for today's session. So could you tell us a little bit about where did you grow up?
Oh, definitely. I grew up in Monroe, Michigan, which anybody from Michigan puts their hand up because it's shaped like a mitten. And then we point to where we live. So I was almost on the Ohio border and grew up there and then went to college not too far from there at Siena Heights in University in Adrian, Michigan.
And how did you go by in terms of, you know, a lot of people navigate into the financial service and financial planning industry. How did you come about into this particular industry? And I remember you have mentioned that you probably started at the time that you and your husband started in this business. So tell us about a little bit of background, you know, in that area.
Yeah, definitely. When I was in college, I was actually going to school to be a CPA. I've loved money since I can remember. And I'm very good with numbers, and I attributed that to my mother. And so being a CPA was just like my direct route. That was what everybody told me that I should be. So my sophomore year at college, I started interning at a CPA firm, which is what, you know, they encourage us to do when we get into that end of the sophomore year. And I had truck drivers as my clients. So they would bring in their toll receipts and their gas receipts and food and things like that. And any time they came into the office, I went running out there and was like, hey, where'd you go? And, you know, what were the things you hauled? And I would ask them all these questions. And one of the lead partners pulled me aside and he said, you're not going to make it as a CPA. And I was just completely destroyed because this was what my life's passion. This is what everybody had told me that I would be great at. And he said, you kind of make us all look bad. Like you're out there chatting everybody up, you know, being extra social. And he said, you know, I actually think, you know, I'm registered with Raymond James as an investment advisor. And he's like, I think you should use your skills more on the side of being in the side of advice, because he's like, you love relationships, obviously. You love numbers and being able to do those analytics. But he's like, I think being a CPA is not the right path for you. And I, you know, he was my mentor really early on. He helped me get registered at the age of 20 and taught me a lot of cool things, inspired me to love equities and individual stocks and how to build them into portfolios. And I'm just super glad that I met him and interned with him, because if he wouldn't have kind of guided me in that right direction and given me like that really good, tough advice, I probably wouldn't be where I am at today. So I think about him often, probably weekly.
And I think that oftentimes that many of us all coming to work with a certain layers of idea, just like the CPA route that you were on, and not knowing that there are other wonderful career paths, such as in the financial service and financial planning route. So at what point that you actually met your husband, that you actually, did you guys created the business together, or how did it actually come to that you have so many years of experience in terms of merging several broker dealers?
Yeah, definitely. Well, he's probably soon to be my ex-husband, but he's also my best friend. And I know that that's kind of an interesting story. We met when we were in high school. When I started working at Raymond James, he was like, wow, that sounds interesting. He was going to school for quality control management, but he loved the finance side of things. And so he started working in the branch with me when we were 20 and 21. And one of our advisors left and went to Sigma Financial up in Ann Arbor, Michigan. And the thing I learned really early on was being an advisor in my 20s, my young 20s, I was going to starve. I found myself very much in an operational role. I mean, your parents won't even give you their money. They know you too well, you know, at that age. And so you're trying to create all these centers of influence and be able to get referrals. But most of the people you know are in the same financial situation as you are. And you're, you know, kind of more debt heavy, you know, in your young 20s dealing with college and just cars and things like that. And so we ended up both interviewing up at Sigma. Sigma was looking for somebody that had a little bit of industry experience, but that could help them recruit advisors to be able to grow their broker dealer. So they hired me for that position. And then they hired Tony in on the trading side, because that's where his passion lies. And so for the last 26 years, you know, we were the fifth and sixth employee at Sigma Financial. We have helped to grow this broker dealer into, you know, what it is today. We started Parkland Securities in 2002. We run the RIA side of things. And it's interesting because when you're running a broker dealer and you're running a client practice and you're parenting two children, our lives diverged a long time ago. And we realized that we were better partners and friends than we were spouses. And so we agreed that that was a good route. And so it's such an interesting story, because so much about our firm is about, you know, us growing up in that firm. But we are amazing friends, and we're better partners, that's for sure. But it's been a great journey. I've learned a ton of things through the past 26 years. Most of them is all based around relationships and how you can expand, use them, and then look back on them and be so proud, you know, of what you've created throughout the years.
And thank you for sharing that incredible story that not that many people that I know of actually started in the business as a first job. Very few that got into it. And you could probably attest to that, since you recruited more than 1,000 advisors out there. So I think that one of the two things that I found when you were talking about it was you knew at the very, very beginning, this is about relationship. And then you also knew that establishing center of influence is really the key. So would you be able to talk a little bit about, so what is center of influence? So for those of folks that who really hasn't got into the idea of using center of influence as a way of doing business. So tell us about what is center of influence, and then tell us about how did you go about doing your first center of influence?
Yeah, so I've always looked at centers of influence as a relationship that you've acquired where you can benefit each other. And so that person has the ability to be an advocate, you know, for you in a lot of different ways. And so my first center of influence was when I was 20 years old and right when I got registered. I was trying to figure out, okay, I'm registered, I have licenses, I'm in this business, I have some knowledge and a lot of great mentors. Well, what do I do with that? How do I get people that would want to sit down with me? And so the very first thing I did was review what my parents, you know, retirement situations were. And my mother worked in a school system. And I grew up in that school system, and she was a secretary at a middle school. And I looked at her options of what she could invest in for retirement for her 403B. And I was pretty shocked, but most of the options back then were like group annuities and, you know, with large insurance companies. But I didn't see anything like from a mutual fund standpoint or, you know, anything that had lower expenses, those types of things. And so I got lucky because my mother worked in the school system. And so the superintendent who made, so to speak, the list of the advisors that could work within the school district, you know, was somebody she had worked for, you know, in the past. But even better, his daughter and I ran track together. And so I just reached out to him and asked for a meeting. And I think he was excited to see me, you know, in this, you know, that next generation of your life, you push past high school and you're in college and having a daughter my age, he took a meeting with me, which was great. And I sat down with him and I had a presentation together. And back then, you know, we didn't have PowerPoints. I had a binder and, you know, things and plastic sleeves and all of that stuff, you know, showing mountain charts and all the different options. And I went in there with what I thought would be a tried and true idea for people who wanted to start investing, and that was with American Funds. American Funds was what I found really early a good foundational piece, and it still is to most of my clients' portfolios. And so I sat down and did the presentation, and he said, "All right, you're in." And he put me in to the school system so that I was one of the approved providers. And then I just went out on a limb and I reached out to every single person that had me as a student and asked them, you know, good what they were you. Doing for their retirement. And thankfully, I was a decent student. So they had fond memories of me. But even better, they all loved my mom. My mom was, well, my mom at the time was this middle school secretary, and she was the core of that school. Everything ran because of her. She just had her hand in everything. And so they all knew me growing up because I would, you know, be doing my homework in her office when she was, you know, waiting to get out of work and things like that. So it was such a cool start. And so many of those clients are still my clients today. And they would give me like $10 a week. It was like nothing to pay any bills on, but now I look at like their 403b balances and see them in retirement. And I'm so proud to say that they were like one of my first clients.
Wow. Such an incredible experience where a lot of folks may not know that your immediate family and even down to the school that you go to could potentially be a center of influence. Because a lot of time people might be thinking something even more professional in terms of another professions for that. So I love the story that the fact that is that your mom is the core of the center. That's like a jackpot of the center of influence. Right. That everyone trusted her. And when she refer you to other clients, that's a great story in terms of how you continue to build up the relationship, basically springboard from mom and then go on to other people within the school system. But I like the fact that you basically just knock on that person's door and say, and did your presentation and able to do that. Now, I do have to say that I was much shy compared to you, your situation, and I was a career changer and I didn't necessarily have that kind of family background in terms of my parents are all in Taiwan and I was here. And it's really not necessarily that the situation that I have in terms of as a center of influence. So would you talk about for people who may not have the situation like you had, what other type of center of influence could be an example that people could potentially explore?
Yeah, definitely. I think, you know, some of the early on, you know, my one designation I have is a certified wealth strategist that I did through Canon Financial Institute. And that was a big part of the program, was how to work with centers of influence. And so many times, we think it's like an estate planning attorney or a CPA, and we get kind of boxed in and we go, okay, how many CPAs and how many estate planning attorneys can I work with? Because it's kind of like a quid pro quo. You know, if you're giving referrals to them, they're giving referrals to you, the situation works out. But if you have too many of them, you know, how is that going to work? And so what I loved about that training was they said centers of influence exist in everything you do. And the word influence sometimes trips people up. And they said it's more of like, it's like the center of relationships, you know? And so a lot of my clients that I worked with, I tried to look at where they were in their work structure and whether they had an influential relationship. And so a lot of times that I've worked with clients, I've been able to like look at them as a center of influence because my own clients have an influential structure within their workplace. And so when they're sitting around having lunch with somebody or talking to somebody and people are bringing up their finances, you know, they then become a center of influence for me because they can say, oh, I work with this great financial advisor and this is some of the things that we've done in the past. And so the Canon program really helped me to expand that. Also, I've sat on a lot of boards. And, you know, like you said, you and I sit on the Women in Financial Services board. But prior to that, I sat on the FPA board and I've done some stuff with NAFA and things like that. In charitable boards that you're so passionate about can actually be the largest center of influence. It'll blow your mind because when you're going into something so giving and wanting to help because that part is so dear to you, things just happen because of that. You don't go in there with the intent of it being a center of influence. You go in there of like, you know, my mother, you know, because of some health issues and things like that, I've become more involved in some of the charities that she works with. And I'm going in there just thinking, like, I want to do something to get rid of this disease, or I want to help out this charity in this way. And when you go in with that purity, it's amazing how people are like, well, what do you do for a living? And you could be with these people for months and you don't know what they do for a living. We all just know we're here for this cause. And then you start talking about it, and then it becomes so natural that I've even found things like that have become such a great center of influence for me, because we have something in common. We're both really excited about being involved, whether it's on a board or just even at the volunteer level, to be able to do something that it just starts that natural conversation starter without even asking.
And I think that those are really, really great points there. Center of influence is all about the relationship of the influence, right? Today, the social media has using the same word influencer, but not necessarily the same kind of environment that we're talking about. But you're right, serving on board or serving on charitable type of boards, it is incredible magnet, because you are there for the same cause, and then you are doing work literally showcasing how you work with clients without really selling anything. And so I really do agree that the serving, because I serve on the FPA board just like you before, and I serve on the Goodwill. But I have to say that all these part of the pro bono works actually do bring in a lot more introduction compared to the actual marketing side of the things. So thank you so much for sharing that. I think that one of the things that in the industry oftentimes talks about the center of influence, you're right, we tend to be talking about the CPAs, the attorneys, right? I remember I have established two insurance agencies, center of influence. Both of them are property and casualty firms where I don't have any conflict, and it is still serving the same natural markets and things like that. But that's a little bit different, because the expectation is the referral process is both way. It's not, you don't necessarily just go in and take their clients and things like that. So absolutely serving on the board. And I believe that a lot of people, even just if the church or temple that you're involved in religiously, that could also be something that you can definitely help with. And I've seen so many people have gone through that route as well. So the tools and networks that you currently have certainly help with that.
Yeah, definitely.
Can we talk a little bit about, from a value proposition perspective, if you are establishing a center of influence relationship, how does that benefit the other party? Because I always like to think about, how do I benefit them first? How much they can benefit from me before I even ask for any type of referrals. So can you help us walk through, how do you position that value, so then your center of influence have the ability to naturally introduce you or influence people your way?
Yeah, I think sometimes we rush relationships, you know, and we ask for referrals too early, you know? And so that's, you know, we feel like, oh, I've done this work for you. We get along, we've established this baseline. And centers of influence, it's something that has to be like, it's foundational, and it has to be like kind of loved and taken care of, you know, for a while before.
Right.
You can actually have that person say those words. And I think what is the benefit to them is that they actually feel that they're not benefiting me. And so that's the really big deal with centers of influence. When you have clients or people that are using, you know, to advocate for you, is that they're looking to help somebody that they care about. And there's nothing more important to them than to put them in hands of somebody that they know is going to take really good care of them. And I feel like, you know, that's the thing that's changed a lot with COIs or referrals, is people are really careful on who they, you know, who they talk about. And so they don't just throw out names and say, oh, go check out Jenny. I think, you know, she's done a good job for us or anything like that. They actually talk about why they like working with me. What was an aspect of their life that I helped them with? And sometimes it's not even financial. I mean, that the biggest thing about this career is the therapy that goes along the therapy with it.
Components of it.
The active listening and being able to hear what they're saying, and then being able to give them the path or even the obstacles, you know, that could be in their way with that. And when you do that with people, they know you're just not telling them what they want to hear. You're not trying to sell them something. And that relationship takes a long time. But what I have found with my COIs is that they don't actually expect anything from me in return. They feel that they're helping out.